Bonjour à tous. Je vais faire l'introduction rapidement en français. Merci à tous d'être venus aujourd'hui à Béton Salon. C'est vraiment un grand plaisir de vous voir si nombreux et nombreuses. Aujourd'hui, le troisième événement d'une série de cinq journées d'études ou séminaires organisées, conçues par Lotte Arndt, qui est un cycle qui s'appelle « Objet troublant, objet inquiet, au-delà des certitudes classificatoires » que nous avons réalisé en collaboration avec une institution allemande à Cologne qui s'appelle Temporary Gallery, dont le prochain événement, c'est au dos de ces petites feuilles jaunes qu'on a distribuées à tout le monde, dont le prochain événement se tiendra le vendredi 3 novembre à Cologne, si vous avez l'occasion d'aller de l'autre côté du Rhin de temps en temps. Donc ça fait partie de l'invitation que nous avons étendue à Lotte Arndt de concevoir l'exposition et de concevoir les programmes publics qui accompagnent, puisque je dirais que ça fait vraiment partie de la mission même, la raison même d'être de Béton Salon, de concevoir dans un même moment les programmes d'exposition artistique et les programmes discursifs. Et grâce à Lotte, nous avons pu le déployer de cette manière aujourd'hui. Je dois préciser que ce programme a été permis par le soutien du Fonds Perspective pour l'art contemporain et l'architecture, un programme initié par le Bureau des arts visuels de l'Institut français en Allemagne, qui a permis justement cet échange franco-allemand entre nos deux institutions. Mais je vais maintenant surtout laisser la parole à Lotte, qui va introduire les participantes de l'événement d'aujourd'hui, et dire que le prochain événement à Béton Salon, cette fois, sera le 2 décembre, c'est encore une fois là, qui sera cette fois entièrement en français, Passager clandestin avec Samir Boumediene, Teresa Castro et Laura Huertas-Mila. Merci beaucoup.
So we keep saying that we will speak English and then we speak French all the time, and we'll try to switch now. If ever there's a problem to understand, please give a sign and we will try to translate in one sense or the other. I wanted to start with an introduction to the title of today's event, Passing and Contagious Liquids. And just bring in a bit how we already said during the guided tour or the moment that we spent together in the exhibition that there are several agents that are part of the exhibition. There are Jean Beret and James Baldwin, but there are also liquids and porcelain, which are major the major part that make the connection between the different bodies and the different stories that come together in the exhibition. When we first started to discuss with Candice on the exhibition, she reflected on the idea of a sentient being, which is this ocean that you may remember from Tarkovsky's film Solaris, and to which the researchers, when they arrive on the planet, are confronted, because it is very apparently not an animate substance, but an agent on its own, an agent that is capable to bring about life, to bring about deceased people who occur as proper agents in the space. And so we discussed about this idea, and even though in the final form that the exhibition took, this reference to Tarkovsky disappeared, there was still the idea of the centrality of liquids. There is a quite big presence of the role of the ocean, notably the Atlantic Ocean, with the history of the transatlantic slave trade. And there's a whole reflection about what you could describe as an animate hierarchy. I will come back to that idea at some point. In the life stories of Baldwin and Barret, the ocean is both. It plays a role as the space of imperial conquest that you can find, for example, in the part of the window paintings work that is titled We Claim the Right to Opacity, so that refers to Edouard Glissant, and that here starts from the image of the arriving boats when they arrived on the shores of Tahiti. So it's really an image that is the one of the imperial gaze on a landscape that is bordered by the arriving boats of scientifics. But there's also the ocean in the role that Paul Gilroy describes, and that has this resistant story of surviving cultural practices that allows to James Baldwin to take a distance from racial segregation in the US and to be a writer in the Parisian context. The installation on the right that I was referring to with the bricks has a title, In the Wake. And we decided not to translate this into French, because this idea of the wake in English has a multiplicity of different meanings. And these meanings all relate to an idea that seemed important to us to keep. The wake is the path that a ship leaves behind it on its passage. It's also keeping watch with the dead, and it is the coming to consciousness. So there are several dimensions that are related to this idea of the wake that Christina Sharp describes in her book, which is actually the first document that you find in the frame of the installation on the right, where she analyzes what she calls an orthography of the wake, and where she tries to show how the slave ship marks and haunts contemporary black life in the diaspora. She notably has a whole part on weather, which can seem in the first time as something that is not political at all, and that she describes as white supremacy, as a climate that produces the norm of premature black deaths in the context of today's US America. So the ocean is present as a structuring element in the exhibition, and comes up again in the description that James Baldwin gives of the porcelain room that you have behind you, where he describes to undergo a sea change. And this sea change is both. It is menacing for a stable conception of identity. It is a threat to the conception of a self that would be a static, a continuous situation where shifting relations to the self and to others wouldn't be possible. And it is also a moment that he's longing for, that he's looking for, that he cannot escape from. So there's these whole descriptions of going to the ocean to swim with a desire never to come back, to get lost in the ocean. We describe that the main piece, so a hard white body, needs to be kept humid in order not to fall apart, and that the fact to keep it humid at the same time brings it into transformation. It isn't a stable sculpture, it is a sculpture in constant transformation, and as you may have seen, the humidity of it allows different organisms to arrive, to live on this porcelain and to transform it themselves. Every morning when Luca and people working at Béton Salon take off the sheet that protects the sculpture during the night, there are new organisms that arrived. And in the following 2 or 3 hours, most of the time, they change because they're not under this surface anymore and they're transforming with the injection of the air. So there is something in the presence of liquidity of our bodies inscribed through the distillation of the piss that refers of this constant process of flowing, dripping, leaking, running, that is very difficult to control and to contain. And this is where we find this connection to the idea of the control of migratory flows, always described with this metaphor of flows, which I think is quite speaking, because in this idea to dress migration as something that is uncontrollable, there is already a resistant part that can escape by affirming an autonomy of the migration, of the movement. I jump here to a book that has a quite big role in the whole discussion and conception of the exhibition, which is Mel Chen's Animacies, Biopolitics, Racial Mattering, and Queer Affect, a book that we have largely discussed in the preparation and where a small excerpt is translated in the publication that you found on your seats. Mel Chen does not speak at all about liquids and fluidity, but that does not mean that the text is not taking up many of the ideas that we will discuss today, notably the one of sentient hierarchies that Chen analyzes as an organization of beings in, and I quote him, graded linear scale from inanimate object to plant to non-human animal to human, by which subject properties are differentially distributed. The text retraces discourses of toxicity as opposed to threatened immunity that has to be preserved. And here I just wanted to quote a small part of the book and go on discussing later. For toxicity's co-extant figure is immunity. To be more precise, threatened immunity. Immune systems are themselves constituted by the intertwinings of scientific, public, and political cultures together. Even further, we know that the medicalized notion of immunity was derived from political brokerages. It is no surprise that discourses on sickness bleed from medical immunity discourse into nationalist rhetoric. Ed Cowan's The Body Worth Defending detailed the history of immunity as a legal concept, tracking its eventual adoption into medicine, a step that eventually enabled people to speak of immune systems with a singular possessive as my immune system. This internalization, even privatization of immunity, helps to explain the particular indignation that toxicity evokes, since it is understood as an unnatural external force that violates rather than informs an integral and bounded self. This is what Cowan calls the apotheosis of the modern body, the abandonment of humans' integral relation to their environments and the insistence on a radical segregation of self and world fueled by a bellicose antagonism. So what Chen introduces is this idea to conceive of a body as a closed entity that would be not in connection but in disconnection with the with the world around it, surrounding it, and not to think of bodies as constantly interrelating, conflictive, but also collaborative entities working together. In Candice Lin's exhibition, at several points, and we walked with you through some of them, Candice tried to work on the opposite idea, the idea of bodies that are interrelating, collaborating, that need to be taken care of, and that don't have clear-cut borders towards other bodies. I won't extend myself any longer, but rather give the microphone to Petra van Brabant, who arrives from Antwerp and Brussels, where she works as a philosopher at the Art School of St. Lucas. I'm very happy also to share the day with Elisabeth Lebovici that I saw somewhere and I don't see anymore. Ah, there she is. And with Clara Lopez Menendez, who will be with us for the discussion, notably in the second part. So we will start with a presentation by Petra, probably make a short break afterwards, then see Vladimir Ceballos' film together, and have a discussion with all of you. Thank you.